One of the greatest speeches in all of history was the speech that Paul made to those learned men in Athens. It is where Christianity met with classic culture, and we're about to study that as we continue our studies in the Warren County Radio Bible School. When you hear that bell, you know it is time for the school to begin. The Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m., and all are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And we're studying through the book of Acts about the early church being guided by Elam's notes, which were Sunday school lessons that he prepared for the Sunday schools of 1925. And this is an old Sunday school lesson prepared for the Sundays of October the 4th, 1925. Now, as we're coming to follow Paul into Athens, we're going to review just a little bit of what he had been doing in Macedonia. There were three churches he planted in Macedonia, one at the church at Philippi, the other the church at Thessalonica. To the Thessalonians, Paul had written, "For from you hath sounded forth the word of the Lord, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but in every place your faith to Godward is gone forth, so that we need not speak anything." 1 Thessalonians 1 and verse 8. These churches were not organized into Macedonian missionary societies with state boards and state evangelists. Each church was a radiating point, and in earnestness and zeal, each worked only as a church of God in extending the kingdom of heaven. The Philippians sent their contributions directly to Paul and not through a state board, and Paul sent back them his acknowledgement and thanks. And then Paul preached first to the Jews in Thessalonica and in Berea. There were not Jews gathered together like that in Philippi, but he preached to the ladies that had gathered by the river. But now he has come to Athens. When in the wisdom of God, the world through which wisdom knew not God, it was God's good pleasure through the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 21. To see how given the city of Athens was to idolatry provoked Paul's spirit within him. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews, and with the devout persons, the proselytes, and in the marketplace every day with them that met him. Paul's custom was to seek the salvation of the Jews first. Here his spirit was so stirred on account of so much idolatry that he reasoned in the marketplace every day with idolaters, while at some other time of the day he taught in the synagogue. And there were in the city of Athens philosophers that were Epicurean and Stoic. The text says, "And certain also of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers encountered him. And some said, 'What would this babbler say?' Others, 'He seemed to be a setter forth of strange gods,' or, as the marginal reading is in the American Standard Version, 'foreign demons,' because he preached Jesus and the resurrection. And they took hold of him and brought him into the Areopagus, saying, 'May we know what this new teaching is, and what is spoken by thee? For thou bringest certain strange things to our ears. We would know therefore what these things mean.' This they did in a friendly way." The Epicureans were not believers in a future state. Their idea was to get the most good out of the present and enjoy life as it passed. An Epicurean now has come to be one who enjoys the gratifications of the appetites. Epicurus the founder of the sect, had a higher idea of good, but it degenerated into the idea of gratification of flesh in his followers. The Stoics were the opposite of the Epicureans. They believed in subjecting the appetites and passion to the control of reason and in learning to bear animal pleasure and pain with indifference. Stoicism, indifference to pain and pleasure, comes from the Stoics. Philosophers of both of these classes met Paul. Neither Epicureans nor Stoic believed in conscious existence after death. Preaching Jesus was to them only setting forth another foreign god, and the resurrection was a strange doctrine of this god. And so we come to what is called the Areopagus. The Areopagus was the sovereign court of the Athenians, famous for its justice and impartial decisions. The court took cognizance of high crime, impiety, and immorality, and watched over the laws and the public treasury. It was so called because it was held on the hill named for Ares, or, as we know him, Mars, the god of war. The word literally means the hill of Ares, or Mars Hill. The Argo, inaccurately rendered marketplace in our version, in which Paul was talking to the people, was bound on the whole northern side by a ridge of coarse marble which rises abruptly to the height of about 30 feet. Toward the west it slopes downward gradually until in the course of a quarter mile it descends into the level of the plain. This is the Areopagus, or, as rendered into English, the Hill of Mars, so called because a temple of Mars once stood on its summit. Its summit is reached by the Agora, by a flight of steps cut into natural rock, the most of which remain unbroken to the present day. And here in the open air sat the court of the Areopagus, by whose decisions grave questions of religion were settled, and sometime great criminals were condemned. Now they were seeking new things. Now all the Athenians and strangers, foreigners, sojourning there, spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or hear some new things. They taught what they knew, and learned what others knew. So Paul was called upon to gratify this desire. These people had learned almost everything, but the one supremely right thing, the true God and His gospel. Many people are now somewhat like those Athenians and foreigners. They are cultured, refined, they know philosophy, they study science, they hear all sorts of theories, and attend all kind of lectures, but they know little of Christianity. At least, Christianity as set forth in the New Testament. And so now we turn to the explanatory notes, and we have Paul's speech on Mars Hill. Let me read that to you again. Acts chapter 17, and I will be reading verses 22, I believe it is, yes, verses 22 through 31. And Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, "Ye men of Athens, in all things I perceive that you're very religious. As I passed along and observed the object of your worship, I found also an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. What therefore ye worship in ignorance, this I set forth unto you. The God that made the world and all things therein, He, being Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is He served by men's hands, as though He needed anything, seeing He Himself giveth to all life and breath and all things, and He made of one every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, having determined their appointed seasons and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek God, if haply they might feel after Him and find Him, though He be not far from each one of us. For in Him we live, and move, and have our being, as certain even of your own poets have said, for we also are his offspring. Being then the offspring of God, we ought not to think the Godhead is likened to gold or silver or stone graven by art and device of men. The times of this ignorance therefore God overlooked, but now he commandeth all men that they should all everywhere repent, inasmuch as he hath appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom he hath ordained, whereof he has also given assurance unto all men, in that he's raised him from the dead. Now when they heard the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, but we'll look at their reaction in just a moment. I wanted to read to you that sermon. It was Paul invited. He stood on Mars Hill in the midst of the Areopagus and addressed these learned Ephesians by beginning saying, "Ye men of Athens." Paul addressed them in a happy and skillful way. Too superstitious, the King James Version says, or very religious, the American Standard, does not convey the idea in Paul's words very well. The expression means very demon-fearing. The people of Athens were worshippers of demons, or of dead men deified, and they regarded it as a virtue to be scrupulous in all these forms of worship. This statement, then, they would consider complimentary. After erecting altars to all the known gods, they erected one to an unknown god. It has been suggested that this altar was intended for the God of the Jews, the God of heaven and earth, of whom they'd learned through the Jews. Whatever reason they may have had for erecting this altar, Paul very skillfully but justly took advantage of it to present to them, without exciting their prejudices, the true God. Verses 28 through 4, Paul introduces God, to whom he refers by making a series of statements concerning him, every one of whom presents him in striking contrast with the gods of the Greeks. One, he made the world and all things therein. Two, he is Lord of heaven and earth. Three, he dwelleth not in temples made with hands. Four, neither is he served by men's hands as though he needed anything. Five, he himself giveth to all life and breath and all things. Six, he made of one every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed seasons and the bounds of their habitation. Seven, that they should seek God, if happily they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from each one of us. Eight, in him we live and move and have our being, as certain of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. Nine, the Godhead is not likened to gold or silver or stone, graven by art and device of men. These attributes could not be claimed for their gods. They had one god for the sea and another god for the sky and etc. But the true and living God created all things, and he is the one Lord of heaven and earth together. Their gods dwelt in temples made with hands, many of which were in Athens, but they could not contain the true God. Their gods made with hands and worshipped with hands as though he needed something, but not so with the true God. Since he gives to all things to all men, they had gods for single and different nations, but the true God created of one man all nations and was God of all, overruling their prosperity, adversity, and national boundaries. By all these things, God would induce all men to seek a knowledge of him, if haply they might feel after him, as blind men feeling their way in the dark and finding him, although he is not far from each one. The idea is that if they could find him by feeling after him as blind men, they could certainly find him by seeking him aright, since he was not far from each one. He is near to each one because in every one they live and move and have their being.